Let's go to Psalm 19. There's a word in the Bible called glory or glorification. No matter where it is in the Bible, if you really look at it, it only speaks of the resurrected Christ. That's what the glory of God is. And so I want you to hear that when we look at this in the scriptures. We always make up stuff. You know, we say the glory of God, well, that must be that, or that must be this, or the world declares the glory of God, or the heavens, it says in here, the heavens declare, when that's because the stars are beautiful. No, that's just man putting his own spin on something. The glory of God is specific, and I challenge you to look it up. It only refers to the resurrected Christ. That's the glory of God. That's the hope. The only time hope is never used in the Old Testament as the word of an expectation of some good thing, as in English. The only time hope is used in the New Testament is the resurrected Christ. And so we've got everything backwards because we put a human spin, an English language spin, on all the words of the Bible. As you've heard me say often, English is 10,000 times the worst language ever invented to understand spiritual things. And we are so frigging full of ourselves that we think we're going to bring the gospel to the world. You think God is going to leave bringing the gospel to the world to a bunch of idiots like us? Or some of these televangelists? Listen to Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God. The heavens express the glory of God. And the firmament showeth his handiwork. The firmament, you know what the firmament is? What?
You were talking about that, like the clouds, the sky, for lack of a better way.
Well, it only applies to everything above that's in the Milky Way. And then the stars are beyond the Milky Way. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork.
So is the part of heavens?
Huh?
Heavens.
Highest.
Okay. So firmament are the stars.
Firmament, part of it could be the stars.
Okay.
If they're in our solar system.
Oh. All right.
Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth or revealeth knowledge. There's no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their line or influence has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the earth, the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat, or again, the influence thereof. It's been my experience when I was searching, especially for, I went to over 100 and well, probably close to 200 churches trying to find a church after my conversion. And every time I heard a teacher or the preacher tell me or tell a congregation how to get something from God, I got sick to my stomach. And that was the discernment. Because I was already an expert getter. I needed to learn how to give. I needed to learn how to die, not to get. And during the course of that time, I noticed something. Especially in the charismatic and the conservative evangelical churches. They really didn't worship Jesus Christ or God. They worshiped the Bible. You understand what I mean by that? This Bible isn't the Word of God. It's words about the Word. And it's so easy to worship the Word instead of the Word. I mean, to worship the words about the Word instead of the Word. Now, it happens to be in the most pristine, clear definition and revelation of the Word. But it's not the Word. Has anybody else seen that?
Yeah, that's why the churches are so, I want to be doctrinally correct. I want a system of ethics to blah, blah, blah. But they don't talk about the Christ dwelling inside. It's the Word.
It's a system of behavior that none of them can conform to. And so they become hypocrites automatically. It's like the, I used to say, the promise keepers, you know, that big men's group that was popular a few years ago.
Yeah.
They couldn't keep the Ten Commandments, so they added seven more. Anyway, this is so critical. And I'm going to review what we've said many times. I'm just going to review it for the sake of our virgin over here. If you look in any kind of literature and you've seen, especially the old timers, they talk about the mystery of this, or the riddle of the Sphinx. You ever heard that? Anybody ever heard that? Well, it used to be. They talk about it all the time because the Sphinx was this great riddle to all of the archaeologists that were going to Egypt. And they said it had the head of a pharaoh and the body of a lion. But it doesn't have a head of a pharaoh. It has the head of a woman and the body of a lion. And that's to show where to start in the zodiac. You start at the Virgin, you end at Leo. And so we are now, we've gone through everything now. We're just starting to look at Leo, the last of the 12 signs. And so let me give a summary. The Virgin is a woman bearing a branch in her right hand on a sheaf of wheat in her left. And the first decan, the decans are three, the sub-signs. The first decan is the infant with the mother, the desired of all nations. And the star of Bethlehem was in that. That was the star that's in the head of that child. That's the star that supernova. It became what the Magi followed. Then Centaurus, the one with two natures, holding a spear, piercing a victim, the despised sin offering. And it's a victim with two natures. Nobody took Christ's life from him. He gave it up gladly for the Father. So he's both the victim and the one that's feared. The next is Botes, the great shepherd and harvester, holding a rod of iron and a sickle, walking before his flock. And the flocks are the Ursa Major and Ursa Minor, what we call them, two bears, the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. And Libra, the scales, which shows the price deficient, balanced by the price that covers. Remember, in case you didn't know this, when the handwriting on the wall occurred in the Babylonian temple in Nebuchadnezzar's time, the handwriting, the finger of God, wrote on the wall, and he wrote these words, Mene, Mene, Tekelu, Pharsin. And he was talking not just to the king and to the people there in Babylon, he was talking to every one of us. we have been weighed in the balance and found to be eternally lacking. There's absolutely nothing that you can do to gain the favor of God. Nothing. Zip. Nada. Nowhere is it in the Bible that you accept Jesus as your personal Savior. Nowhere is it in the Bible that ever an altar call. Nowhere in the Bible is there ever anybody made a decision for Christ. So it's all gotten upside down. So anyway, but Christ is the victor. Christ alone is the balancing the scales. He's the price that covers. And then the next part of the sign, the first decan for Libra is the cross. It's the only. It's the only sign in the zodiac that looks like what it is. The second one is, and it is advancing. The centaur is advancing over it, but the cross is now in the lowest parts of the heavens because of the procession of the equinoxes. The sign of the cross was visible in Palestine, in Israel, when Christ was crucified. And it slowly but surely has gone now. It's only visible now in Australia and in New Zealand. But then the victim, slain and pierced to death. But then the crown bestowed. Notice the serpent is trying to take the crown. Third sign of Scorpio. He's seeking a Scorpio, and all these creatures, a Scorpio, the scorpion, the snake, the dragon, the monster Cetus, they're all just a type of Satan. And Scorpio seeking to wound the heel, but he in itself is trodden underfoot. You can see him trying to wound the heel. And the serpents, it's the serpent struggling with the man. And the man, Orphiacus, wrestling with the serpent, stung in his heel, but crushing the scorpion, the enemy. And the third decan is Hercules, the mighty man, wounded in heel again, kneeling, humbled in conflict, holding tokens of victory, the golden apples and the three-headed dog of hell. His foot is on the head of the dragon, or again, the evil one. And Sagittarius, the archer, again, to nature, is going forth. The first decan is the harp, which is an eagle holding the harp. You see it, the eagle. And it's triumphant praise for the conqueror. And then Era, the altar, was consuming fire pointed down, i.e. it's the consuming fires for the enemies. And then Draco, the dragon, the old serpent, winding about the North Pole, being cast down from heaven. Then this weird animal, Capricornus, the goat of atonement, slain for the redeemed. Let me see that. Notice the goat is in a position of dying, and the tail of the fish, but if the fish tail is alive, and he's giving the death of the goat is giving life to the fish, and the fish are always the type of Christ, a type of his Christ people. And then the first decan is the arrow. It's the arrow of God, and it's an arrow without a bow. You see, everybody see that? And it's the arrow of God. Why is there an arrow without a bow? Anybody remember?
It
because God knew from the before the foundation of the universe that his son would die. And so it's by the Father's hand. Then there's the eagle, Aquila. It's pierced and fallen. Another sign of Christ. And then the dolphin, Dolphinus. Now, the dolphin has always been the form, the symbol of, in the countries that are around the ocean, the dolphin has always been the symbol of resurrection. And it's at home in two natures. It's at home in the ocean and at home in the air. Then Aquarius, the water bearer, bearing the living waters of a blessing poured out for the redeemed. And now, for the first time, we have the fish, the first time we've seen God's people. And notice that all of the water is going into the mouth of the fish. If the fish, that's its only life, the water coming out of the rivers of living water from our Redeemer. If you leave it for a second, you're dead. And it's the winged horse, Pegasus. And he's speeding. That's another story. I don't want to get into it. Then there's the swan. The dove has been the symbol of the Holy Spirit for ages. But at the time of Christ and before, the swan was the symbol, the white swan was the symbol of the resurrected Christ. So here we have the swan Cygnus, flying, going, and coming. And notice, by his body, he makes the form of a cross. So he's carrying the cross. And Pisces, these are the redeemed, blessed, who are apparently bound. You see, there's the band connected to two fish. It's the fish of the Old Testament and the fish of the New Testament. Held by, and notice the band is held by the Lamb. It's doubled and held fast to the neck of the monster Cetus. And the next one is B, the woman in chains, Andromeda. That's the bride of Christ, apparently still in chains. She doesn't know she's free yet. She's still bound by the evil one, the Antichrist, which is her mind. Then notice the king, Cephas, crown king, is Christ, holding the band and the scepter, foot planted on the North Pole, the great victor, the Lord, is ruling. Then in the next sign is Aries. Now, each of these signs has been, the length of it, you've heard me talk about this, but the length, our year is a year of 365 days. The zodiacal year is 25,692 years. And that's the time, because of the wobble of the earth, the North Star changes as it goes around. Slowly but surely goes in this circle and takes 25,000 years for it to go plus. So at the time, like the time the Great Pyramid was built, the North Star was assigned the star Draconius. Well, that's why that every one of the six pyramids, they have a chamber that goes down into the depth of it and is pointed directly at Draco, because that was the North Star. These guys, 4,000 years before Christ, they knew that the earth was around. They knew that it revolved about the sun. They knew that they knew the circumference of the earth down to an inch. I mean, we hear all this stuff that they used to think the earth was flat and all that crap. That's only in the Western Europe countries. The place where there's any revelation, they knew. But our history is based on Western Europe, and as opposed to the parts of the world where there was life. Like the kind, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to get off. I'm going on a tangent here, but that's all right. Do you know that there's no such thing, if you're a believer, there's no such thing as zero? The concept of zero was invented at two places at the same time, in India and in Arabia. At the same time, 1200 AD. Now, what happened then? What happened when they invented the concept of zero? Then man could manipulate nature. You had to do that. You had to have the concept of zero before you could use math to manipulate nature. That's all mathematics does, is it manipulates. And that's all we think we have advancements. But every advancement, every invention, every idea since the death of the Christ on the cross has been an attempt to flee his revelation. And that's what's so sad. Man calls it progress. God calls it death. All right. So anyway, Aries, that's why I started and all that. Abraham was the perfect Christian. He was the first man to understand that truth had to be something. Now, before that, truth was just whatever every man thought. You know, you could have regional truth and national truth. But truth to Abraham was it could not change or denigrate or advance with the passage of time. He knew that something to be true, it had to stand the test of time. And that's why I keep challenging all of you to whatever opinion you have about anything, test it against time. Put it in any time, in any circumstance, in any place, and see if it stands the test of time. There's no opinion that you can have that can stand the test of time. Therefore, it's not worth giving any breath to. Therefore, you're not taking a stand in some stupid opinion. That's why the Bible says don't take stands, because let your speech be seasoned with salt. Let your thoughts be seasoned with salt, your speech, so that you only talk about those things that don't vary and change with time. So anyway, Abraham, his father was Terah. And Abraham's father, it says in Genesis 12, was an idol maker. So we think he was a little guy that carved idols. No, he was the guy that defined the idols for the kingdom of Nimrod, for all of Babylon and Persia on it. And Nimrod didn't have any children. And under that law of that empire, the next in line was the child or the son of the high priest. And that was Terah. And his son was Abraham. So Abraham gave up being the God of the world, just as Moses did. Now, you understand what that means? And he gave it up because he tested everything that he saw and all the value systems of that society. They had a great hall, and in it there were 500 gods. And then their chief god was Taurus, and that was the age of Taurus. Now, Abraham saw during his early years that the first sign to appear in the evening of the spring equinox was no longer Taurus, which is what it was up for 2,000 years before. Now the first sign to arise was Aries. So he knew that the crap about Taurus being the chief god could not be right anymore, because he changed with time. So he took an axe handle and he destroyed 499 of the gods in Nimrod's unbelievably beautiful palace. And then he took the axe handle and laid it in the arms of Taurus. It was a figure of a man with a bull's head. And Nimrod got so mad at him that he put a price on his head. And all that he had to do to be king of the world was to just sort of ignore that. He could think it. But he took that axe handle and busted every one of the idols. And we've got more than 500 idols now. Just think about the stupid value systems that we bought into. Democracy. Free enterprise. Capitalism. On and on and on and on and on. And they're all idols. They all change with time. You understand that?
Well, yeah, two of the big ones for me are the Brotherhood of Man and the Fatherhood of God.
Fatherhood of God, those are just lies. They're not even idols, they're just lies. Anyway. So Abraham was born at the dawning of the age of Aries. And 2,000 plus years later, Christ was born at the dawning of the age of Pisces. Right now, we're at the dawning of the age of Aquarius. Now, the wild part is 500 years, so it was not, it was. Five 500 years after Abraham was Moses. And Moses had received the law, and part of the law was the sacrifice of a lamb in the sign of Aries, sacrifice of a lamb for Passover. And so their first Passover, just as they were coming out of Egypt, they sacrificed a lamb just as they were entering the lamb's body in the sign, the first sign that appeared on the spring equinox. 1,500 years later, just as Christ was being crucified, that head of the lamb was still visible in at Palestine, and the bright star, I think it's Spica, is that it? Mary? Well, anyway, Christ was able to see the lamb being sacrificed as he was being sacrificed. And then it receded, and now we're in the age of Pisces. You understand that?
Wow. So he probably saw that from the cross?
He probably saw that when the sun darkened. You remember the sun darkened in the daytime?
Yeah.
And that began the night of the last day. And you can see that star in Aries. I mean, yeah. I can't, it might not have spiked it, don't quote me now. All right. Then now, as the lamb was slain, now it's the enthroned woman. Andromeda has lost her chains, and now she's now Cassiopeia, the woman enthroned. Captain delivered. She's preparing for her husband. Now, the second sign in of the decan of Aries is the monster Cetus, but it's closely and strongly bound by the lamb. You see that? See, everybody finds Cetus. It's that ugly beast, and that's. The lamb has got his leg over Cetus, the band that's. Okay? Then Breaker, there's Perseus. He's the mighty armed, mighty man with winged feet. Cut off the head of the monster full of writhing serpents and holding the great sword in his right hand. Everybody see that? That's why on the cross. The end of the age of Aries, Christ defeated Satan. The only part of Satan's army that still exists is Nick's mind. All men's mind. The men's mind is the instead of Christ. Man's mind is the Antichrist. Man's mind is 666.
First time I heard you say that, of course, all the years I've been in church, the Antichrist is talked about as a monster.
Well,
and you know, when you qualify it, though, no, but you qualify it Greek, the Antichristo, meaning instead of the place of how we worship ourselves, it's always me, my plans. I mean, I give lip service to the Lord, but it's really me. And
The Lord's going to help you be a better person.
Yeah.
No. You have to die. And you died. You have to die. All men died on the cross 2,000 years ago. He was the last Adam. He's the last Adam. Who are you?
I don't know. First time you said that, only then you went to the scriptures. I never read them like that.
All right. Okay, the next, again, we're going in one direction, but the precession of the equinoxes goes in the opposite direction. You understand? So now we're at Taurus, the bull. And it's the bull to rule, the Messiah. Now, the first decan of the bull is Orion, the glorious prince. The light breaking forth, sword girded on his side, foot on the head of the... And that thing that looks like a rabbit is really the serpent in the oldest planispheres. Then the river of wrath, the Eridanus. You see the river under Orion?
You said this is a very bad depiction of that, right? Because it's in it.
It's the biggest in the sky. I mean, there's nothing bigger than this river. It goes all over the place in the sky.
Is this what's called the Eridanus Void?
It's breaking forth for the enemies of Orion. Orion was a type of Christ. No. It's called in the ancient languages Eridanus Tortuus. It's the torture, river of torture. Now, this is the river of the lost souls. And you know, I teach that hell only lasts as long as time lasts. And God said, soon time will be no more, so there's not going to be hell in eternity. So the river of, there's a phenomenon, and we studied this a little bit, but in the sky, there's something called the Eridanus Void. And it's 1 billion light years across, and it's cone-shaped, and 10 billion light years across at the bottom. And in that cone, there is essentially no stars, no galaxies. And so the astronomers have called it the Eridanus Void. And again, it's a void because that's why it's you know, people wonder, well, but what am I going to do? Am I going to hell? Well, hell only lasts as long as time lasts. After time, when the seventh angel stands and says the mystery of God is completed, time shall be no more. There's no time. And so if everybody that isn't part of the bride is lost in that Eridanus Void that never existed. That's so they never existed.
The Hebrew word for hell is Sheol, the unseen.
Well, another word is Gehenna. Gehenna is just the dump of the Jerusalem. The Valley of Hinnom. All right. Then the shepherd, Aruga, is the third decan of Taurus. He's carrying a sheep in his arm, and holding the bands of the same bands that are tied to the fish. You can't see it in these mats, but he's holding the same band in his right hand. So all of the members of the church are in his right hand. Then, Gemini. Now, in all of the mythology, Gemini is the twins. It's in Rome, it's Pallas and Pollux. In Greek, it's something else. But it's not twins, it's a man and a woman. So for the first time, we see the bride as a woman. And then you see that so-called hare, a rabbit, lepus. That's its first. It's not a hare. That was changed. That's a long story. But anyway, it's a serpent under the enemy's foot. Then in Canis Major, is the Cirrus, the Prince of Princes, and Canis Minor, the Exalted Redeemer. And it's not, see, those are dogs, right? Again, well, we went through that all over. They changed those. Then we find Cancer. There's 11. It's the possession held fast. And the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. The Big Dipper is Ursa. I mean, the Little Dipper is the first decan. And it's the lesser sheepfold, Ursa Minor. And the Big Dipper is the greater sheepfold, Ursa, which is called Ursa Major. And the lesser sheepfold is the members of the bride that are starting with Princess Mary, starting with Abel and all of the saints of the Old Testament. And the greater sheepfold is all the believers now. Then the ship, Argo, traveling safely with the redeemed pilgrims. Remember that ship covers 30% of the heavens. So it's a humongous ship. And finally, where we are now, is Leo. The Lion of Judah, victorious, aroused, ready to rend the serpent. And the first decan is this Hydra, seen under the lion, the fleeing serpent, trodden underfoot by the crab and the lion. And that serpent there covers over 120 degrees of the sky, of the 360. And so when it talks about that the third of the people, you know, in Revelation is talking about that snake. The 30, it's... Anyway, we'll get there in a minute. It's the devil destroyed. And then the cup is crater. It's the cup of divine wrath poured out on the serpent. And then the last one is the raven, Corvus, the bird of doom rending the serpent. Now, that cycle has been repeated thousands and thousands of times in history. You know, remember we talked about that 65 million years ago is when the star in the head of the child in Virgo, signifying to the, it took 65 million years for that light to reach the earth. And there's 25,000 plus years is to make this circle, so this cycle actually goes around every year. We see this being repeated. But think how many, the full cycle, so the North Pole was back at the same exact place, was every 25,000 plus years. There's another length of the day, it's 220 million years. That's the length of the day if you consider Milky Way is the center instead of our sun. And then if you go to the next degree, it's the length of a day is 440 million years. So it's all depends on where your reference point is of the length of a day. Understand that? All right. Now we're in Leo. We now come to the end of the circle. Repeats itself every 12 months. Another way, it's called Josephus's cycle. And its cycle is every 600 years. And that was 12 of the Jubilee years. So that, and it took that time for all of the things to get back into the same point they were. Not on the North Star, but everything else that was related to the stars every 600 years. That's why the ancients say that's why men lived to such great lengths back then, those before the flood, because they had time to understand and develop the stars. Because these every culture says these stars came, the star maps came from Seth and Enoch, passed down to Shem, and passed to Abraham. Abraham taught it to the Egyptians. The other people from the flood taught it to the other cultures, whether it's in Persia, whether it's in India, whether it's in Mexico. Originally, all Chaldea, Scandinavia, all the ancient cultures had the same symbols, with minor variations, for those groupings of stars. They all had 12. They all had 7 days in the week after the 5 visible planets and the sun and the moon. Where did that come from? How can we have, 7 days in the week after the 5 visible planets and the sun and the moon? How did that happen? Do you ever think about that? How did we get 7 days in a week? Why not 6? Why not 5? All these things that are universal, we take for granted because we never question. All right. What have we talked about? Another way is every 25,762 years. The line, every one of the 12 signs was on a, as what was on the standard of the leaders of each of the 12 tribes. And the lion was on the standard for the tribe of Judah. And we can go, I'm going to go through later and tell you which signs were on each of the tribes and how that defined how they encamped in the wilderness. Now let's read Genesis 49. This is where Jacob gives his prophecy about each of the sons. Just look at verse 8. Verse 8, 9, 10. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Now again, remember, Christ is from the tribe of Judah. And that's why all these are true. And David. David was of the tribe of Judah. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. Again, and so for the first time now, Judah is called the lion. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh, or Christ, shall come. And unto him shall be the gathering, shall the gathering of the people be.
Even the next verse, you should...
That's what I'm about to read it.
Oh, I thought you said 8 through 10. So.
Well, I did, but I changed my mind. Shut up. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. So let's go now to Psalm 18. Didn't write the verse down, I'm sorry.
Nine?
No. It's about being a lion. I didn't realize this was this long. We're going to look at it. We'll look that one later. I'm going to look it up. Never mind. Let's go to Numbers 24. Numbers 23 first.
Psalm 23?
Numbers.
Oh, Numbers.
Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. This is Balaam's prophecy. Verse 23. Well, anyway. Let's just go to one verse. And we could spend all the time. I'll never finish this. Behold, the people shall rise up as a great lion and lift him up himself as a young lion. He shall not lie down until he eat of the prey and drink the blood of the slain. Then go over to verse 8 of the next chapter, 24. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. You remember that's that not a unicorn, it's the ream, the humongous bull. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies, and he shall break their bones and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched, he lay down as a lion, and as a great lion, who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesseth thee. Cursed is he that curseth thee. And then go to... Well, let's talk about the lion's character for a minute. His boldness, fierceness, self-confidence. He's strong enough to kill and drag away a buffalo, which is like four or five times as big as he is. He can crush the skull of a horse with a paw. Break the backbone of an axe with a bite, of an ox with a bite. His claws, when they move, cut 4 inches deep into the flesh. His jaws can crush a bullock's bones, but he has the agility of a cat and the nimbleness of a house cat. Instinct for blood is a terror to men and beasts. Yet Christ is called the Lion of Judah and the Lamb of God in the same sentence. Let's go to Revelation 5 and see that again. John wept because no man was found worthy to open and read the book. And then in verse 5, one of the elders saith unto me, weep not. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the 7 seals thereof. And I beheld, and lo, in the midst of the throne of the 4 beasts, and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb, as it had been slain. Having 7 horns and 7 eyes, which are the 7 spirits of God sent forth into all the earth. He came and took the book out of the right hand of him that sat upon the throne. And when he had taken the book, the 4 beasts and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, every one of them. Every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of the saints. They sang a new song, etc., etc. So this thing, this mystery of him being both a lamb slain from the foundation of the world and a vicious lion, how can he exist in the same He is and always will be the Lamb to his church, to his bride. His blood cleanses us from all trespass because we screw up daily. His humility is so great in us that he will not occupy where you are, and you as the temple. But one day, it says, now will I arise. And that day happens. Let's go to Revelation 10. The angel which I saw stand upon the sea and upon the earth lifted up his hand to heaven and swore by him that liveth forever and ever, who created heaven and the things that therein are, and the earth and the things that therein are, and the sea and the things that which therein are, that time should be no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to stone, the mystery of God should be finished, as he hath declared to his servants the prophets. Time shall be no longer. It's hard to understand in everything, because we've studied it kind of. Even as slow as we've been studying it kind of fast, the zodiac. But in each of the signs, it reveals an aspect of the glory of God. The heavens declare the glory of God. But it also reveals an aspect of the enemies of God. And so, it's hard for us to consider this thing about how can a loving God, blah, blah, blah. And when will that cutoff be? When will the Lamb of God become the Lion of God? And that's what we'll try to determine as we study the sign, the last sign, Leo.
We might try to get that up for Leo.
I think so.
What does zodiac mean?
Zodiac means the circuit.
It's Latin for the Maserat, right?
Right.
Well, I can probably have this. We're going to head out.
Anybody have any thoughts?
Have you got any response to what we talked about?
The first time somebody comes here, you can say anything you want. I won't talk back to you. The second time
it will make unmerciful fun, or maybe the third time.
Would I make fun of anybody?
The signs of the zodiac in one direction and they?
Because it starts with a virgin.
Virgin.
Same.
But
you go to and ends with a lion. But the procession of the equinoxes goes backwards.
Oh.